Hello, 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 and welcome to the Sober Butterfly Podcast. Today, you are in for a treat. I'm joined with a very special guest. I have Ketsia over at the Sober Elephant Chronicles joining us today, and we're going to have a really real, unfiltered conversation, of course, about sobriety, but also touching on a topic that I hear from a lot of women in my DMs, who email, who just have face-to-face conversations about what it's like to be sober, but also alcohol use disorder and eating disorders in that parallel. So in previous conversations on the podcast, I've sort of touched the surface about my life and my experience, especially in addiction, around compulsive eating and disordered eating and overexercising, but I really haven't gotten into the weeds about what that looked like for me. And so Ketsia and I connected about this very topic, so we wanted to bring that to the forefront today. Before we get started, I just want to make it very clear that Ketsia and I are not professionals. We're just having a conscious conversation about our personal experiences. So by no means are we giving advice, but we are just sharing a little bit more about our personal history with disordered eating, sobriety, and what works for us and what we're working through right now. So without further ado, Ketsia, thank you so much for joining us today.
So happy to be here. I was really glad that you reached out about this conversation also, because I think I'm kind of in the same place as you, that I maybe have alluded to some of this stuff before on my platform, but I haven't really like gone in deep into it. And there is a lot of people, especially women, that reach out and they share about the tangled web between disordered eating and, you know, alcohol abuse. And for me, for a long time, I was like, oh, I don't have an issue with disordered eating at all. And then as I started doing the work of sobriety, I was like, oh, okay. Then you start thinking back, you know, and the same reason, like, I thought I didn't have blackouts. Well, I did, having blackouts since I was probably 19 years old. So, you know, I'm excited to get into the conversation with you.
I think this is an important topic that so many women are going to relate to and connect with us even further about. I would love to hear a little bit more about your personal story. So I don't know much about Ketsia, but I would love to just hear more about life before sobriety, what got you to this place of becoming sober. And then later on, we can touch a little bit more on our personal experiences with eating and how that connected. I like the tangled web analogy you gave, because I think it is so interconnected. And when you're in it, you don't necessarily see it until you gain perspective. So I'm totally with you there. But yeah, I'd love to hear more about your story, Ketsia.
I'm Canadian. I live in the States now, but I grew up in Western Canada in a place called Edmonton, which is like one of the coldest places on earth. And that's not an exaggeration. The winters there can be as cold as Siberia. So we're talking like minus 40, minus 50 Celsius. And I grew up there and I lived there until I graduated high school. And I lived there for a couple of years after high school. I got a full-time job. I wanted to move out. I was always like really set on moving out. I wanted to be independent. I wanted to make my own money, make my own decisions. I felt a little bit, not like the black sheep, but maybe a little bit different to my family. I felt that I wanted to do different things. Graduated in 1999 and I got a job, and it was like paying 40 grand a year at that time, which was like a lot of money. I was like, sweet, I can get my own apartment. Oh yeah, it really was. And I got my own apartment with a couple roommates and I worked in this job and I loved it, but I still had like that itchy kind of feet, like I wanted to travel. And I know you travel, right? So I kind of, I love this vibe, right? And I just kind of wanted to see what else was out there. I'd never left Canada. And as it happened, I met a British guy at my work, and him and I started dating. And he was like, my contract's coming to an end, I'm moving to back to England, do you want to come with? And I was like, sweet. Yeah, I do.
Sign me up. Right?
I went over there and I started taking night classes at a college. I wanted to do my undergrad in English literature. And what better place to do it than English, right?
It's amazing.
In that time, I also was just trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. Like, I was doing recruitment, so I'd work like a contract for a company, and then I'd leave and I'd take, I guess they call it gardening leave or something, and I'd leave and I'd go and travel for like a month and then I'd come back. But I never wanted to like settle into a career. I just always felt like there was like something else out there. And I think that then later became a big part of me and my drinking. I was like a seeker, looking for something else. I was never satisfied with what I had.
We have a lot of parallels in that regard, like feeling like a black sheep in the family. I very much relate to being highly independent at a young age and wanting to sort of explore. I also love to travel and I'm constantly seeking. I don't know what I'm searching for, and I'll let you know if I find it. But I think this idea of not feeling satisfied is something that, until you said that, I never made that connection with why I drink. But I think a part of it is like, if you go through your day-to-day operations and you're just not feeling fulfilled per se, it's really easy to look for fulfillment in something that can give you an instant sense of gratification. And for me, that was the bottle that was drinking. So I never made that connection until you said that. So thank you for bringing it up. So can I ask you, Ketsia, what place in your life? So you're trekking across the globe. You're sort of like figuring out, okay, what do I want to do with my life? At what point do you feel like your drinking was at a place where it was not manageable or it was causing you to miss out on life's opportunities even more?
That's a great question because I only recently, so I'll be coming up on 2 years of sobriety November 1st this year.
Congratulations. I'm gonna
Thank
jot it down.
you. During the time I was living overseas, Britain does have like a huge binge drinking culture.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Huge. But I was like, so I moved there when I was 20. So I'm turning 41 in a couple weeks.
Wow, you look amazing. Sorry, I don't mean to like objectify you, but you look great.
So I lived there in my early 20s up until I moved back just before I think I turned 27. And we went out, and there was times, and looking back now, like I said, only through the lens last couple of months that I realized that I did have some blackouts during that time, but I wasn't a daily drinker. I don't even think I really kept alcohol in the house at that time. It had not started impeding, my work life or my personal relationships or anything. Everything was still fine. However, when him and I split up and I made the move back to Canada, my grandfather was sick at the time. There was family stuff going on, and I'd kind of almost been looking for a reason to move back. He's a great guy. We just weren't going to be together forever. He was more like a friend to me, for a lot of those years, So I moved back and I started partying very hard. And I happened to land this amazing job for this company paying like six figures. Like it was just this, like, I got an apartment downtown. Everything kind of fell into place. But I also fell into the scene of work hard, play hard, party hard, right? So there was now all of a sudden I had all this money and it was all my own. And I am not good with money at all. Financial stuff is a huge part, again, of my drinking. But one thing I just wanted to say about my drinking during this whole time, and one of the reasons that I drank in general, is I have ADHD, but I did not realize this until about a year ago. So when I drank, it would actually quiet down all of the streams of voices and things going on in my head. If I wasn't drinking, socializing was very hard because I would go out and the stimuli all around me, like the lights, the noise, the music, the people. But when I was drinking, I could do all those things. I met all sorts of people. When I started partying in those years when I had come back from England was really bad. So like the low points were I'd be hungover in my apartment and I would remember nothing or parts from the night before. I remember being really sloppy. I remember falling in the middle of like a busy intersection, things started happening. Long story short, that job ended up coming to an end. It was kind of contract work that I was doing, and my boss that I was working for at the time was a huge narcissist, and he was very, what's the word? He was very sexist, like sexual comments and stuff towards myself and other women in the office. And he would take credit for work that I did, and it was a really bad scene. And during that time is when I started getting panic attacks. I remember sitting in my office and someone that I worked with, a colleague, brought me a paper bag to breathe into the one day. I was like, that is bull, whatever. Like, I'm like, I can't believe that, but I could not. I literally was sitting on the floor of my office, and I've never actually talked about that, but I think about that. And those things, when they start happening to you, they chip away at that inner child and that part of you that's really sacred and precious, and you start getting so disillusioned with who you are and what you are in the world, you know? That started
I'm sorry,
happening.
that's tough. That's really tough. So it
Yeah.
sounds like your professional life on paper looked great. Behind closed doors, you have ADHD that's undiagnosed.
Yeah.
And so the alcohol is sort of like propelling you to feel as though you're able to socialize in situations in which you wouldn't be able to do so without acknowledging your diagnosis or
Yeah.
understand at least what's going on behind the scenes.
I had no idea ADHD even existed at that time too. Like, it's only in recent years that we understand that it's not always going to present as like hyperactivity. For me, there is
Right.
hype, but it is hyperactivity in here though, right? So externally you might be like, oh, Kezia seems really down to earth or whatever, but on any given day, the amount of work that it takes to process all the stuff
Yeah.
going on in my head, it is a superpower. I'm full of ideas all the time, right? I always have stuff, but I can also run myself into the ground through that, you know? And so
Mental
I think,
fatigue.
absolutely. So I
Yeah.
think, yeah, on the outside, everything looked great and stuff. And then when I left there, a friend of mine was going to see his girlfriend in Australia. He said, "Hey, I'm leaving like this week. Do you want to come?" And the lease was up on my apartment. I was renting. And I was like,
Wow.
sure. So I went to Australia.
That's
But
amazing.
this was my like MO. Again, if I look back now, I'm like, I always left and I always ran. And not maliciously or intentionally, even if it was, that was just what I had become comfortable with. And Australia was amazing, but from the perspective of my drinking and partying was again really bad. The problem was though, I was searching for something and I ended up like I'd be like sleeping with random guys that, you know, had girlfriends or that were in relationships, things like that. That's when that part of my behavior that's linked to drinking started happening, that sort of like need for external validation. And some of those situations were really dangerous too, like me leaving where we'd be at to go with someone who maybe was part of the group or was there, but like I did not know this person. You
Oh my
know,
gosh. Yeah,
this
I'm nodding my head because
in
yeah,
Australia.
I that was a big part of my reason to stop drinking because I was also in a foreign place. I was in Mexico living there and didn't really know anyone. I mean, I made friends along the way, but I was just randomly partying, going off with people, and not necessarily having the same support system that I had in the States to where it's like, oh, Nadine, don't go anywhere. Like, we have
Right.
all eyes locked in because she's a
Yeah.
runner. I put myself in very compromising situations to where, anything could have happened. So yeah, I connect with that completely.
Oh, but like I did not connect the dots. Long before our drinking becomes problematic, there are signs of it. And like that
Yeah.
for sure, years before. So I always used to say I did not become a problem drinker until I became a single parent. So my daughter's turning 8 in December this year. I became a single parent when she was 10 months old. So
Okay.
and I was on the other side of the country. I was living outside of Toronto at that point. When I came back from Australia, I was in British Columbia for like a year and a half. Met the person who would become the father of my daughter. And we very quickly moved out east. His family was there. And then I became a single parent. And I always said, when I first got sober, I was like, that's when my drinking became problematic. That is not when it became more problematic at that time. But there was many other things that were behaviors that were going on to do with, you know, trying to find connection with people. And I was just desperate to try and feel good about myself in those connections.
Do you think that motherhood just sort of exasperated that fact for you because you were no longer a single young girl? That's how I feel. Like, I just felt like I was masking a lot of my abuse because I was blaming like my youth. And it's like, no, actually, you have a problem. Like, being young has nothing to do with it. Being international has nothing to do with it.
Absolutely. You're so right when you say the masking. The problem for me, because my ADHD was undiagnosed, when you throw hormonal stuff in there, women's hormones is like madness at any time in our lives. Like, so I think about like perimenopause and menopause. I'm in this like fascinating, like deep dive into this stuff right now. I love nonfiction reading and podcasts and whatever. I'm like, I want to understand my brain. So,
Yes.
but what was happening was because the ADHD and then undiagnosed, I think I did have a bit of postpartum as well. And then the hormones, plus all of that just meant I was extremely overwhelmed. I was completely overwhelmed. I had no family there to help me.
Oh my gosh.
It was a very acrimonious like breakup for a lot of it in the beginning, and I just internalized all of it, and I tried to be super mom. And during that time was when the mommy wine culture was like just starting to ramp up like pretty badly. And so like it would be very innocent seeming, park play dates with your Yeti mug of wine, but like that just like that continued. Like that was not just me having that wine there. That was me having a bottle of wine later at home, which then my drinking then turned into daily drinking for the last 2 years, and then like morning drinking because I was physically dependent. So it sneaks up on you literally out of nowhere. To say now, like, that I was a morning drinker is like there's still some shame attached to that. I'm the first to admit that, like, I'm working through that stuff, but to me, if I hadn't gone through this myself, I would have probably still attached a stigma to it. And that is what keeps so many people still sick and stuck in that, So many women are suffering and people are suffering in silence because of the stigma around that. Like, oh, you couldn't possibly do that. Well, how about alcohol is addictive? And that can happen to literally
Thank
any of
you.
us. Any of
See,
us,
for
so.
me, like I held on to this fallacy that I wasn't a problem drinker. So, unless it was vacation mode, I wouldn't day drink. But best believe I was waiting until 4 p.m. To me, there's no difference because if you're
No.
anxiously, like literally, like my brain was obsessing
Watching the
over when
clock.
it was socially acceptable for me to crank open the bottle and then throw
Oh.
two back. What difference does it make? I should have just paced it out through the day, actually. That would
Right.
have been better
There's
instead of
no
just,
difference. There
there's no
isn't.
difference. But I think you're absolutely correct in the assertion that so many people are, hiding it in secrecy and suffering in silence because of the social stigma that we attach to when the appropriate time to drink is, when in fact alcohol is just a, chemical that is designed to hook you and
Oh,
make you
yeah,
want more and
exactly.
more. And then literally your tolerance increases and increases for most people. And then the next thing you know, you're like me and you're drinking 2 to 3 bottles of wine per night.
Which
And
is,
then some,
which is.
So you mentioned at one point you didn't keep alcohol in the house. I got to that place too because I didn't trust myself. But what did
Yeah.
I do? I was always in close proximity to an alcohol or wine shop. So
Right.
I had the best relations with people.
Oh, yeah.
I would like force myself to get up to go get it, but what difference did it make? So I was trying to trick myself in
Oh,
so many
yeah.
different ways because I didn't trust myself.
Right.
Inherently, I knew I had a problem, but I
Yeah.
consciously I wasn't willing to admit that I had a problem. So,
Yeah.
what was your breakthrough like?
In the like summer or spring of 2018, I started like Googling. Some of it's a little hazy because I was drinking really heavily then, but I started searching for podcasts or books or like things I could read about women who weren't drinking. Like I was like, how do people do it? There's got to be other people, other women or other moms who don't drink. And I stumbled across a podcast called Home with Holly Whitaker
Whitaker?
and Laura McCowan. And excellent. If you guys haven't listened to that podcast, I think there's like 160 episodes or something, and you can binge it. It is so good. This is
Plug for that.
before, oh yeah, like this is before, culture took off, the sobriety culture. But so I started listening to this secretly at the gym. I was going to the gym every day, pretty much, right? This is what's going on in my head. I'm going to the gym every day. I'm trying to look a certain way. I'm not fueling my body with enough food because I'm replacing that with wine and with vodka. And the problem is, I started getting stomach issues. So my stomach lining was probably nothing that was ever formally diagnosed or anything, but my stomach would be full of acid all the time. So I felt too sick then to eat anything. But I'd go to the gym, my blood sugar would drop mid-workout. I would be like trembling, walking to the bathroom, trying to like steady myself, and in that time listening to that podcast. And I tried to, in that span of 2018 to 2020, I tried to quit 4 or 5 times, and I ended up in the ER with withdrawals. They would prescribe benzos. I would take the benzos and quit drinking for a week or so. couple weeks and then slowly think that I would switch up what I was drinking. I was like, oh, wine is too
Yeah.
sugary, so I'm gonna drink vodka cooler,
Just
not
straight.
cooler. Yeah, straight, pretty much. Yeah.
Chill it.
Oh man, it was not good. So.
I got a little shiver because when you mentioned the trembles, like, and the low blood sugar and just that cycle for me, it was constant. So, this has been an ongoing battle. So in 2011, I lost my father. And when my father passed, over the course of 3 months, I lost 50 pounds. So that weight just completely, I want to say melted off, but I think for me, that's what the beginning of where my disordered eating really kicked in. I'd always had body dysmorphia issues. I didn't like how I looked. I didn't think that my outside matched my inside, but I was never like withholding food. If in fact I would binge. And then when my father passed, I think it was my means of trying to reach for something and have control. We both mentioned this idea of seeking. So I was seeking to control my life when I felt like, because he passed unexpectedly, I wanted to regain some control over my life. And so the best way to do that was for me losing weight, which meant not eating enough at all and over exercising and binge drinking just consistently. And I remember actually growing to enjoy the feeling of straight vodka or whatever I was drinking passing through my esophagus. Like I like that feeling on
The
an empty stomach.
burning. Oh my
The
God, I love
burning,
that.
thank
I
you. That burning
love that.
sensation. Ah, and I hope this is not triggering for people, but that was something that I was like, yes, I'm doing it right. That means I haven't eaten enough. That means I'm going to get more drunk faster
Oh, you
and
definitely
be able
would
to
get
black
more
out,
drunk.
forget my issues. So that was something that I did. So I dropped a significant amount of weight and then the validation, right? So then you start to hear compliments from people. Oh my gosh, Nadine, you look amazing. So that's just making me feel even better. So that happened for a while. And then I, like I said, I dropped the weight and my then goal was never to ever gain weight again. Like that was so, how do I sustain this? Right. And so throughout my 20s, it was just like I was maybe plus or minus 5 pounds, but I was very obsessed with a number, an image. I think also living in a city like New York, you just see so many like model types walking
I
around.
can't even
And
imagine that.
it's a lot of pressure. And so another thing for me is I'm a tall girl, so I always felt like I had to look like a model because why do I have this height? So it was just all of this pressure. Even the people complimenting me by asking me if I'm a model would actually fuel my eating
Fuel
disorder
it.
more because now I'm like, oh, okay, I have to live up to this, expectation. So it was like this perpetual cycle, but the drinking really helped me forego food. So I've mentioned before on podcasts, like I would happily forego lunch, dinner, breakfast for liquid. That was my liquid diet. I would go to brunch, and of course, it had to be bottomless. Hold the orange juice, please. I just want the straight champagne. Like I was just so obsessed with that. And I think towards the end of my drinking, so the pandemic hit 2020, obviously. And so the world was at a standstill. The gyms weren't open. I actually left New York and went home to where my mom lives in Florida. And so I just started compulsively running. I do love to run even to this day. It's part therapeutic, but I do have to watch it because I think for me, there's no set number. It's just like an arbitrary number. So I always want to be better. I always want to be greater. So I would just run miles upon miles upon miles for the cardio mainly in the beginning. And then I wouldn't eat. And so I would be coming back from the sweltering sun. And I've had fainting spells so many times from my running, like where you just see stars and then you're just like, oh my
In the
God, I don't want to hit my
Florida
head.
heat. Oh my
But yeah, I would
gosh.
be like just reaching for the nearest car because I know I'm going down. And this is how I live my life. Like literally just happily skinny. That was the way I saw it.
When you're in it, though, you kind of like it's almost like, hearing you talk about it now and me talk about being at the gym and this stuff happening. like feeling like literally I felt like my legs, because I did a lot of Googling and I was like, there's a lot of like neurological damage that can happen from your drinking as well. So like I literally felt like my legs were so shaky. Like I'd be trying to like go on the treadmill. It was like blurry and I like was trying to get to the bathroom so like no one would see me. And I'd sit in the stall and I started bringing like little chocolates to the gym with me. Like they were like, to this day, I eat slightly different ones, but sometimes I take it out and it reminds me of that, and I'm like, oh no, I can't have that, right? But it like I'd start putting them in my little fanny pack or whatever, and I'd go to the bathroom and I'd eat one, and so I'd feel temporarily okay, right? The sugar would hit, things would stabilize, but then I'd go home. First thing I do when I get home from the gym is crack a drink, right? Like, and
Yeah,
then
of course.
or pull whatever out of the freezer, like Fireball or whatever I was drinking, vodka. If I talk about it now, it's like watching a movie of someone else doing it, because I just want to like hug that girl and be like, we don't have to live like this. But of course, those messages of like external validation for me, my turning point was when I got pregnant and then trying to shift that post baby weight. There is a ton of pressure to do that too, no matter what woman you are, where you live. Everything, media, movies, all sorts of influences tell you that you ha should be able to bounce back. So I was 30, I was 33 when I had my daughter, which is doesn't matter either way, but like I was a single parent. It was hard enough to get to the gym as it was, but I put so much pressure on myself. I was like, come rain or shine, like I had to be at that gym. Meanwhile, my workouts were not really effective in building muscle or anything because I was drinking all the time. So I didn't even have the proper energy. I had no understanding of it, but it didn't matter because all I cared about was appearing that things were okay. So I was like, I was going through the motions. I'd go tanning at the gym, like I'd go and get my hair done. I'd spend all this money I didn't have on shopping, and I'm like, I had so many things like surrounding me. If you took all those things away, like I just felt so uncomfortable with myself. I hated
Yeah,
myself.
when you strip that, it's like what's at the core. And even the part where you mentioned, you'd be at the gym and your vision starts going blurry,
Oh,
but
yeah.
you're embarrassed still. We're so obsessed with image
I never
and
said anything to anyone about it. I stopped tanning for a while because my hands would get so shaky. I couldn't sign like the sign-in form thing. Like that's how bad it got. And if I think about that, that was in the last like year or so, but like I couldn't like control like the shaking sometimes. I have anxiety and I didn't realize it then. So like I do get nervous sometimes, but this was like next level of that. But I would have never said anything to anyone. I would have never asked for
Same.
help. Like, pfft, I am fine. Or I would have said, oh, I'm coming off a sickness, or I'm just feeling a little sick right now. Like, no, this was me most days.
Yeah, I saw
No.
something that said that even like when someone's dying publicly, a lot of people are embarrassed to ask for help. So you could be choking and like somebody
Right.
still won't say something to get your attention because they're so
Exactly.
embarrassed that they're literally
Exactly.
gasping for breath. But
Yeah.
that cycle is just so sad. When I was drinking, no matter what, you mentioned you worked out every day. That was me too. So I would feel sick if I didn't work out. Now, I know now that I mentally felt would feel sick, but it would be a compulsion, right? So no matter how much I drank the night before, I would, as it rolled into the next day, I would be the only person amongst, say I went out with girlfriends, I would be the only person amongst my group that would get their ass up and go to the gym. And people would just look at me and give me praise. They're like, oh my gosh, like you're so diligent and you drink the most. How do you do it? They're like, what's the secret? And the secret is I'm sick. That is the
That
secret.
is the secret.
That's the secret.
I'm
Because
obsessed
I should be in bed like you because I drank more than you, but instead my ass is at the
this.
gym, but it's not because I want to be here really. It's because I feel like I have to be here. And if
An
I'm not here,
obsession.
it's going to be worse because then I'm just going to punish myself even more. But I would overexercise to punish for the work that I did and then reward myself with the same thing that I used to punish myself.
Oh
It's
yeah,
just
it's not logical at all. There was no logic to that. But I was holding on to alcohol as the only thing that could slow my brain down, take away some of my self-hatred in that moment. That was the thing. I don't know if for you, you said you felt that compulsion. You had to go to the gym, and that almost made things right. You're like, oh, well, I went hard last night, but I went to the gym. But then you go hard again that
Equilibrium.
night. Absolutely. So you're, as humans, we're trying to constantly find this homeostasis within everything. You know, I come to understand this in sobriety through meditation that I do now, or through fueling my body with the right food, or mindfully being nice if there's a day that like I should not be going to the gym. Like I have to like really think about that still to this day. It's such a work in progress because it's so ingrained in who you are at that point. And it was what I was clinging to because alcohol would relieve some of the pressure, the high standards, the perfectionism I had on myself. If I look at pictures now or like selfies or whatever, I'm like, I didn't look the way I thought I did. Like nearly at, like
Thank you.
at the end of the night, not even at the end. Like it could be early on because I would pregame, I would be
Oh, of
drinking.
course.
I was going out Saturday night. I was drinking from lunchtime, like having
Oh,
drinks,
yeah.
you know, that.
Weekends, all bets off. Like during the week, I would try and hold it together, but I was still drinking at night every single night. But weekends, I wasn't going anywhere without pre-gaming. Like I don't care what it is. Like
No.
I'm having a drink and I'm bringing one with me, probably en route
But
to go there.
that alcohol becomes your safety blanket, right? Like
Oh,
you're
for
just
sure.
without it, you would feel, I wouldn't know what to do with my hands. I wouldn't know how to interact with people. I would feel like I wanted to crawl out of my skin because I didn't like what I saw. You know, it was this constant narrative in my head and these voices constantly saying like you're not good enough. People are gonna see what you really are. They're not gonna like you. And unfortunately, that affirms itself sometimes for me through dating. It did, trying to go on like dating sites and stuff. Man, that is the next level of like hatred. If you're already not liking yourself, I'm not trying to discourage people, but it's hard when you're sick anyway to then try and put yourself out there was part
Because
of
you're not
that.
really putting out your true self, because your true
No.
self needs to do the work, right? And you're not going to be like, hey, I am this very flawed person. Please love me. Instead, you're presenting as the version of self that you maybe aspire to be or become,
Yeah.
but that person isn't real. Last week's episode, I touched on briefly, I was in a relationship, the only real relationship I've been in. And for those 2 years, I hid my drinking and we lived together
Oh.
and I was very composed, but I was self-medicating heavily,
Yeah.
and he just
Yeah.
thought it was like a little quirk or endearing. Anytime it kind of came out, he's like, oh, like you don't have to bring wine home every day. And I'm like, in my head, like, this is
Exhausting
not for
trying to.
you.
No, right? Nice
is
try. We're not sitting here and having a civilized glass of wine with dinner. Like, this isn't
Right.
for
And he
me.
smoked weed a lot. So I would always like deflect and be like, well, you get high. I just like have my wine. And so I would be drunk, but he wouldn't know. But like I say all that to say, like dating, like just touching on that because I'm trying to dip my little pinky toe back in the dating pool, not fully immersing myself yet. But it's really difficult because A, most of the dating apps, for example, I explicitly put on my dating app, I don't drink, just because I would rather people stop asking me if I want to meet at the
Meet for
bar.
a drink,
So,
right?
right. So I put that out there and people must either not read it or just think I'm like, I don't know, pretending. I don't know. But like that's still the go-to meetup. Like, hey, let's go
Oh,
for a
yeah.
drink. Let's grab a drink. Let's hit this bar up. And
Huh?
so I am a little afraid just to go there because I have so much, I think, work to still do with my body image, first of all, because like a part of me knows I look good, and maybe that's like vanity to say, I don't know, but a part of me knows I look good, but a part of me also is constantly striving to look better. So it's like I can't rectify the version of self that I think I should be and the current version that I am. And so even now, at this stage of where I am, and I like that you touched on like the things that are working for you, like you meditation and things like that. I'm still trying to add to my toolbox because to be real with you, I still struggle. Like once I became sober, so I have just over a year, my soberversary is July 5th.
Yay.
So I don't even know because I stopped weighing myself. It's just something I can't do
Can't
anymore.
do. I
So I stopped.
understand.
It's just like I go but based off of my clothes and how I feel. But and every now and then I'll break out a tape measure, but I don't weigh myself. So I don't know how much weight I gained, but I know I gained weight. And so that was extremely triggering for me. Like more so than people, being like, smell the tannins on this one, like this red, like more, no, like more triggering than that.
Yeah. Even.
So I know that's linked to my disordered eating. I'm wondering, what strategies are you employing now? And I'm curious for my own sake, but also I'm sure people listening would also like to know what things they can try if they're struggling.
Because there's not like a one solution to
this. There's definitely not.
I think you touched on something where you talked about trying to rectify like the different parts of you to find this, you know, where you are now. About 2 months ago, I started seeing a therapist who does internal family systems, or IFS. Mm-hmm. That has truly been life-changing to a lot of parts of my sobriety, because the family part refers to the different parts of you. So not your external family, but different parts. So inside Nadine, you'll have parts that want to pop up and protect you. You've got protector parts. So something triggers mm-hmm. them, that triggers them about abuse that you might have suffered or something, right? That protector part comes, there's a firefighter part that comes up. Mm-hmm. At the core of you, you have a true self. So everyone calls it something different. I call it my soul. So I have my soul.
Right.
Your soul exists through all the stuff you've been through, all the trauma, all the pain. Your soul was always there, right? But it got completely buried in all of these other parts that were sticking up for you, trying to protect you, plus people and their parts. So you come up against a person who is wounded in a certain way, their part is going to trigger something, and those parts are going to, and it sounds kind of far-fetched, but internal family systems has really helped me to approach those parts with curiosity. Curiosity has been one of the really important things for me when it comes to food and stuff like that, is if I find myself in a moment judging myself, for example, if I'm like, oh, why did you eat all those chips last night, right? Everyone has their thing, that's their thing, right? So it's like
Oreos.
Oh, I like the white ones. But something comes up, right? And you're like, I always tell myself, and I tell other people, I say, just pause in that moment, just pause for a second. Same when it comes to like, if you're thinking of reaching for that drink, but with food, when I find a judgmental thought coming to me, stop and get curious and say, hey, where is this coming from? Like, do I know when this started? Sometimes that started way back in childhood. Sometimes you were praised for how you looked. I was a gymnast when I was growing up. So,
oh, wow.
I never.
A lot of.
I know.
Critiques, positive and negative, I'm sure.
Oh, and a lot of girls, I never had bulimia or anorexia. But I had some tendencies that were very unhealthy towards food and eating. I think personally, myself, if I had struggled with weight, it would have reared its ugly head. Because I never struggled with weight, I could keep things a certain way. Even to this day, looking at myself, when I turn sideways in the mirror, I want to see a certain thing, right? I want to see my belly not look a certain way.
Yes.
And it's all about pausing in that moment and getting curious about it. And instead of trying to push it away and bury it, to say, okay, come in. Like, I accept that you are going to feel like that. And I want to give you the space to show up that way, because there's obviously a reason. And that internal family systems has been so monumental to that. And same as you, I can't keep a scale in the house. I am currently doing a 12-week fitness challenge with other women, but I have my boundaries around what I'm doing to do with that too.
I've never heard of the internal family system. Is that what it's called?
That's what it's called. Yeah, I got
that. I'm going to look that up. I'm in therapy. Oh, there's a book, No Bad. Oh, that's beautiful.
Because no parts of you are bad. So there's yourself, or whatever you want to call it. If it's your soul, your divine, your essence, whatever it is, your essence of Nadine. And then there's all these parts that you work with every day. And problems come up when we start denying those parts or pushing them away, or when we're not honoring them. And so it really is honoring them. And meditation does also allow me to drop into that a lot more too. It's brought me to such a different place, like spiritually, where I understand that my body is the physical representation.
Just like the essence, like you said, the soul, the core. I think ego is a part of me that I often put to the forefront. Mm-hmm. And so I need to like dig deeper. And I like the approach where it's from a curious place.
Yeah.
Because the judgment that I place on myself, and I think women tend to do this a lot, more so than I think men even, mm-hmm. where it's like this negative self-talk, especially around body image and presentation. Mm-hmm. So like instead of like critiquing myself, correct me if I'm wrong, I guess the goal would be before I get to this place where I like eat a whole sleeve of Oreos, for example, mm-hmm. I can ask what's driving that urge to do so, because I'm not doing it because I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. So I'm clearly trying to feed a part of me, maybe a need that's not being met. Is that my understanding? But even if I do eat the sleeve of Oreo, instead of then saying like, you are such a piece of garbage,
happened. But it still will feel uncomfortable. You're still going to feel like you're acting a little bit when that judgmental voice comes in and you're used to beating yourself up for it. But then this, you're like, okay, when I talked to Ketsia and we talked about this, like, I'm going to approach this with curiosity and I'm going to be kind to this part of me. It's still, you're going to be like, roll your eyes maybe and be like, oh, whatever. But honestly, it's with same with anything. How can you ever fix that part of you when you're constantly greeting it with shame or guilt or anger or all these emotions that are judgmental towards it? Because
right.
that part is showing up for a reason. Even if you don't discover the reason till you're 95, if you can give it space to just like breathe and to be like, I am not going to die because I ate that sleeve. Will I feel mm-hmm. sick? Maybe, whatever, right? Will I learn my lesson? Also, maybe not, you know?
Yes.
Like, but you're not a bad person because you sometimes do that. And sometimes it's subconscious too, that I'll be sitting there. When I first got sober, I'd be sitting there eating Nutter Butters on my sobriety meetings. And I would, and then this is the disordered eating. I would look on the, you know, you look on the back and you say, okay, there's 4 in a serving size. So I'll have 4, right? But then you do your next 2 and then you're like, well, I might as well just have the 4, right? So untangling some of that too, of like your tracking of that stuff is so hard, because, and also though your body's recalibrating in sobriety, you might not know what you need to satiate you for a long time. You won't know, right?
That's true.
So what works for you in the beginning of sobriety might not work for you now, because your body has to totally like balance itself, you know.
I know people talk about the sugar. So if you drink in excess the way I did, your body may be craving a replacement for that sugar. And then for me, I think it's almost addiction replacement, because especially in the beginning. Now I feel like I have a better grip on it, but in the early stages, it very much went from, okay, I'm drinking to now I'm eating. That was like the pendulum. I have to be mindful. I don't know if it's just like I have more of a compulsive brain that just leans into things and I'm like, okay, this is not my thing. But I definitely was very, like I said, triggered in the beginning because I was overeating and I knew I was overeating. And then I was trying to overcompensate by overexercising. And then it just became like this battle for me to find balance. Mm-hmm. And right now, for example, you mentioned you're doing a women's fitness challenge. I'm doing Muay Thai in Thailand. And awesome. So I have to check myself. It's amazing. But the exercise piece I have to watch too, because I'm very competitive. So there's that piece.
Me too.
I get into comparison. Yeah. So I'm like looking at the other women's bodies like, oh my God, they're so ripped and I'm not right now. Mm-hmm. And so I just have to be mindful. I think it's something that I'm going to work through forever. But I really like the part where you mentioned that we're not just made up of one being or one essence. It's like all of these culminating factors that play a role and it's all interconnected.
It can be overwhelming in the beginning because you start getting all these messages and downloads of like things going on around you. And you're like, how do I know what's true? How do I know where I stand in all of this? And so I wouldn't recommend, like, for example, I'm almost 2 years and now I'm doing a fitness challenge. But even then, my limitation around it, I'm not posting the progress photos, like they're just for me if I wanted to do that, right? I'm not going to post that in the group because I just feel like it would be like what you said, that comparison thing. And it's just, I don't know. It's just those Boundaries, yes, but also I think all of us that are in recovery, we have those type of personalities where we're kind of like all or nothing for a bit too.
Yeah, that's it.
So me,
That's it.
I dove into like podcasts, literature, like my bookshelf. I've got like 400 books in my apartment now, and I bought all of those since I got sober. Like books show up all the time. My husband is like, what?
What is
Now
going on?
I have a business where I
Yes.
teach writing workshops, and so I can write off all these books, right?
Oh,
So I'm
yeah.
like, this is sweet. So I can just buy more books. But it's an obsession too, right? It is literally everything is. And I feel like there's never any point where you're fully healed and cured
No.
of
Oh,
that
my God.
obsession or what have you. But I think it's now trying to understand how can I direct that energy into something that is more nourishing and more
Positive.
on a soul level, like nourishing in all planes of who you are, you know?
I
So,
love that. I feel like you touched on this, but I do like to ask everyone
yeah.
this. So, what are you doing to protect your sobriety?
For me, it's boundaries around my morning and evening routines. I don't do interviews, for example, at 10 o'clock at night. Very rarely I'll attend a meeting at like an 8 o'clock thing if it's with my little group of women that I speak to regularly, and I protect my mornings. And the reason I do that personally is overwhelm was a huge cause, a contributing factor rather, of me drinking and having that respect, even to the point of like, if someone's texting me or they want me to call, unless it's really an emergency, it has to wait until I've started my day. And
I love that.
some people might think that that's really harsh, but you know what? I don't care because that honestly is what keeps me grounded. Does it mean that I don't have a lot of friends in real life here? We just moved here 2 years ago. That's not my goal. You know, my goal is to protect my sobriety. I still struggle with sleep though, because of my ADHD. I'm not medicated for it, and I still struggle a lot with sleep, like switching my brain off, but way less than I did when I was drinking. Sleep when you're drinking is not restorative.
Sleepless.
It's
Yeah.
literally passing out, you
Yeah,
know,
it's a pass
watching.
out. That's what it is. And you just
Right.
pray that you can get enough hours in before you wake
Oh, I remember I'd check my watch. I'd make all these promises. I'd be like, I'm going to stop at this time. 3 hours past that time, I'd be rolling home and I'd
You're
be like,
slinked over the
oh,
couch, like
right. Your contacts are still in. You're just like, oh,
the
I got to
lights are
get through
fully
this.
on. You're like, oh, I
My
did it
skin.
again. So I don't miss that. I'm glad that you are sticking to a routine. And
Yeah.
I truly believe that you can't even help others unless you are helping yourself, right? Like, so
Right.
if somebody is like, oh, I need you to do this, and you forego your own personal needs, I used to be a people pleaser. So I
Me
would just
too.
do it and resent it the
Yeah.
whole time.
Yeah.
Like,
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, or I'd be like, you know, just yeah, overwhelmed, and then take it out on myself later,
Be
usually
a
with a drink. Now
bitter
I'm so
person about it,
overwhelmed.
right? And it's not a science. Like, I still do struggle with this. I am an extreme people pleaser, and I'm a Virgo, I'm a perfectionist. But if I can at least honor some parts of my routine, even on a family level, like when you're living or cohabitating with people, or you have a routine that's intertwined, like say you have a friend you go to yoga with or whatever, setting up healthy routines and structures that are supportive. So people that are on like the same track as you is, I'm all about talking, even conversations. Like, you know, I
Right.
don't do every podcast that I get asked to do because I feel like when I started following you and I saw what you were doing, I could tell there was a connection. You know what I mean? So why am
Yeah.
I used to waste my time on people that I would never even like give the time of day to now. And I don't mean that in
Yep.
a harsh way. It's just like,
No,
but
it's
like life is short. Why are
life
you
is
doing
short.
that?
You have to do what feels right. And I like the collaborative part too. Like, you can connect people into
You
your
can.
routine, but it
Yeah.
has to align with your purpose and your
Right.
mission. And if
Right.
not, then it's like, it's nothing personal. It's just like, we don't vibe. That's okay.
I would make a quick point too. I love sober communities and sober Instagram and stuff, but I have to keep my compulsion and obsession in check when it comes to that as well, because I will start comparing myself to other people there, other
Same,
influencers, and
same.
it is a slippery slope. There are still sick people in there. And so it is good to have a community, but pick and choose. Even if you have three people, two people, one person that you implicitly trust, then that's enough.
Find myself doing that sometimes as well, where it's like
yeah.
the perfectionism comes out. I want to be perfect. I want to present myself to be this version of self that I think is best aligned with this person that doesn't even exist.
This higher version of you or whatever, like, oh, doing all these amazing things. And it's like, you are doing all these amazing
yes.
things. But trying to, when you find yourself taking too much time to, well, I'll speak for myself, if I'm taking too much time to present that perfect moment that I experienced in real life on social media, then I got to check myself, because I'm like, I am wasting
yeah.
way too much time trying to make a reel, which I'm not good
yes.
at. I still do
yep.
them, but I laugh at myself because I'm like, they're whatever. Right? They're not good and I don't care, you know, but
it's the curating for me. Like, yeah, it's like, how much time am I spending on this? But this is why I love the podcast, because I feel like I can be more of my authentic, flawed self on the podcast and talk to other
yeah.
authentic, flawed people, as opposed to presenting very perfect filtered images on Instagram
yeah.
because it looks pretty. And I do like that too, because a part
yeah.
of me is like, I like to be girly, I like to present a certain way,
right.
like whatever. But this is just where I think the real healing and the real work gets done, and having real conversations with people. And if you don't feel uncomfortable, then yeah, you're probably not doing it right. Right.
right.
Like, if you're not putting right. yourself out there just a little bit, and you're like, eh, I don't like how this feels. This is not this
just
is
that not little bit past
the safety. And that's the big part of drinking for me. At the end, it wasn't even like enjoyable for me. It was just like, this is what I do. I feel safe here. Even
yeah.
though I know it's a very flawed cycle, I've been doing it for so long. I take refuge in that.
Yeah.
But now, or what got me sober was like being uncomfortable, right? Like
yeah.
we know that not drinking after your body is physically, emotionally, just even for me, like I thought I was spiritually connected to like drinking.
Yeah.
I was just like, I thought I was having these like awe-inspiring moments with God, closer to God, because I was high. Like, you know,
right?
like just
oh.
like ridiculous. Oh my gosh. Like it's laughable now, but then it was like really real for me.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You look back now and you're like, oh, how could I have ever thought that? But that is real when you're in it. But for me, that was music also. I was big into the dance music, like to like EDM
mm-hmm.
and like,
oh, yeah.
we'd go to Coachella and stuff. And like, I was big into that dance scene, and I could not, still to this day, there's certain music I can't listen to because music was so transcendent for me. And I would combine that with drugs. And I,
oh, of course. Yeah.
And before alcohol was ever a problem, it was drugs, right? So then I
yeah.
just transferred it to alcohol. So
yeah, well, it's legal, so it's more socially acceptable.
And
yeah.
yet it kills so many people, you know?
Yes.
So.
Exactly. I know those spaces too. Yeah. I can't go. There's no way I could go to a music fest now. I don't think so. Like, I've done a lot
no.
of things. Like, I went to a rave in Costa Rica, and that was like partly accidental, and I got there and I was just like, yeah, I'm out. Like there's no way. It's just like the strobe lights and you're sweating on me, please. It's time to go. And like that was something that I used to take a lot of solace in as well. Like I thought that was like my space as well.
Spiritual,
so I totally
yeah.
get that.
Oh, whew. I realized and I was like, I don't know. I see pictures from Coachella and stuff now, and I'm like, I would love to redo it in a sober headspace. But at the same time, I went the year they had like the Tupac hologram and stuff, and there was a million people.
Oh, yeah.
There was a million people at that last show. So the
oh
crowd, and you think how many of those people are on some type of substance? I don't know that now I would even want to be there, because I'm just like, oh. But at the time, I was just like right in the middle of that. And
yeah.
It was a very, what felt like a spiritual experience, because we grew up with like Tupac and stuff like that was, so it felt so elevated and so transcendent from
yeah.
everything. And it's a memory that I'll always have, but I,
yeah.
that whole scene for me had to change, because I had stopped doing drugs at a certain point, but
mm-hmm.
When I was deep in it, I was really deep in it.
I would like to explore that as well, that realm of like going to like a Burning Man or a Coachella, but in numbers. Like, I feel like you would need to go with other sober people
yes.
who understood the struggle and also had an appreciation for the music. Like, I think that's the
yeah.
way, the only way I think is feasible. I don't know.
You could all rent a villa and do it as like a sober babes thing. You know what
yeah.
I mean? That I I could get on board with. I would need to be loud and proud about my sobriety,
Yes.
though. You know what I mean? Just to be in that space, I think is hard, but it's an interesting
Evangelize,
conversation.
like go around.
Yes, let's convert
Hey guys,
people.
I know you're high right now, but
Right? They'd be like, "Get
here's
away
my
from me."
card. Talk to me when you come down.
Can you
Can
imagine?
you
Oh my
imagine that?
God.
Hold signs outside.
See, this
Join
combines
us.
traveling, this combines music, this combines, kind of that vibe. But then you like go off of the music festival site and sleep in your own bed at the end of the night because you're like, I
Yeah,
can't
I
be
mean,
around it.
can you imagine?
How good.
Like, you don't
I
lose
love it.
anything, your respect, your
Ah,
keys, your
right?
wallet. Like,
Your
you're just like,
respect and your keys. You meditate in the morning.
I'm
Just
glad that we have
summarize.
this recorded. So if you guys take our idea, we know you heard it from us
Exactly. You heard it
tonight
first
or
here.
today.
I
But
love it.
Katsia, this has been amazing. I really
Yes.
appreciate everything I've learned from like your personal story, like your connection with over-exercising, disordered eating towards the end of your heavy drinking, and then like the INS, IFS.
IFS, Internal Family
IFS,
Assessment. Yeah.
Internal Family Services.
Yes. Systems.
Systems. Not sorry. I'm like, that sounds like
The
that
social
sounds like a government
services.
agency
Yeah.
that's ready to take me away. Internal Family Systems. Actually, I'm gonna ask my therapist if she's heard of it.
Yes.
I'm sure she has, but I want to look into that. And the book was called, what was it called again, for
No.
maybe viewers who want to purchase?
No
No
Bad
Bad
Parts.
Parts. I'm going to download that on my Kindle if they
It's
have
really
it, or listen
good.
to it on Audible, one of the two, and let you know what my thoughts, because I'm very curious.
You'll have to report back to me too, because I'm still working through this book right now because I'm doing the work with my therapist. But just I know there's so many modalities out there and stuff, but I've honestly tried a lot. Cognitive behavioral therapy worked for me too, but
Yeah.
this really it helps me go deep into some of the stuff because I had wanted to do EMDR and I can't find an EMDR therapist, so
Oh, I'm
this is
sorry.
it. Yeah, it's hard to
But you're
find a
doing the
therapist.
work, it sounds
Yeah.
like. And this seems like a really good resource. So I will report back to you and I will let you know my thoughts. But thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate just all of your shares and your wisdom. And I feel like the listeners at home will take away a lot as well, because I know I have.
Thank
So thank you,
you.
Ketsia, for coming on. For people who are looking for inspiration, you can totally follow Ketsia at the Sober Elephant Chronicles. She has so much cool content on there. She doesn't think she's good at reels. I disagree. I think her reels are really great. You can report back to us and let us know. But yeah,
There
go
we
ahead and
go.
follow her for more sober inspo and just content in general, because she's really amazing. And I really appreciate her for coming on to the show today. So
Thank you
thank you,
so
Katsia.
much. I've loved this. Thank you.
I loved it too.